Okay, this hour, Conversations with Linda Moulton Howe. I want to ask her a couple more questions about the star map, and then we'll go to your calls. Next hour, open lines right here at Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie, Conversations with Linda Moulton Howe this hour. Linda, I bet you're such an earthy woman. I bet on Labor Day you barbecue like roadkill or something, don't you?
I know. I'm a vegetarian completely.
Are you really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. I have been for almost two decades, a complete and total vegetarian.
And have you found a difference when you went on it many years ago?
Yeah. I felt better with much more energy. I've always had lots of energy, but a vegetarian diet for me really works. And to tell you the truth, when I was working on A Strange Harvest, my crew, which were huge meat eaters, they stopped eating meat for the entire month that we were doing the show because they just could not tolerate the idea of eating meat after seeing these animals with these bloodless excisions in the fields.
That would do it. Hey, this star map, and let me ask you something before we go to phone calls, and they're all lining up here for you. When I talked with Dr. Simon back 40-plus years ago, he told me that he believed that whatever they saw, the hills believed what they saw.
Right.
So what he ruled out, a hoax or fraud coming from the hills. He doesn't know, at least he's 40-plus years ago. He says, George, I don't know what they saw. They believe what they told me under hypnosis, and that's the basis for what I'm going on. Based on that, I guess we could rule out that they went into some astronomy magazine or book and concocted the star map based on something, right?
Right. Absolutely not. And Betty didn't have any education in Barney in terms of things astronomical, and it was only later when Marjorie Fish did all of that work getting very thin wire and trying to string wire three-dimensionally about a 3-foot by 3-foot size and taking colored beads based on what we have in Gliese catalogs and astronomical information and trying to place where we knew certain suns were on basically on a ratio that would relate to light years, the closest star, Alpha Centauri, is 4.5 light years, and Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2 is 37.5 light years from here. These are close suns to where we are in the solar system, and it is so interesting that when Marjorie Fish did this work and trying to make a three-dimensional model to see if she could find an area, an angle that would match what Betty had drawn under hypnosis, it turned out that there was like a cluster. I think she even used the term like a field of yellow suns, very similar to our own.
Well, you know, one day I had asked Seth Shostak from SETI if they had beamed signals in that direction, and he kind of gave me a vague answer based on they scanned the sky, so he's sure they hit it. I got to tell you, though, Linda, if based on this story of Barney and Betty Hill and knowing some precision on where these extraterrestrials might have originated from, if I were the folks from SETI, I'd be beaming and trying to get signals back and send things in that direction for years. I don't know why they don't. If they are, they're not telling us.
Yes, and I think it's the latter because, George, as I have reported on Coast now for years, there is a very strict policy of denial in the interest of national security on all things related to extraterrestrial biological entities and their technologies. And that policy of denial goes back to the Truman administration forward. And we have talked in a variety of programs about why, and the list is very long, but it starts with for a nation and a government that wants technology for its own use and application to military, it is going to put a clamp down on advanced technologies that it does not understand and has retrieved as its top priority. That's the real reason why everything is covered up. And then after that comes religious and political and economic reasons. But they wanted this technology they have been working at back engineering for a very long time, and that to me is the solid contribution of Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso in his book, The Day After Roswell, when he describes in detail his firsthand knowledge about being given an assignment to get retrieved what was called extraterrestrial biological entity technology from wherever they were retrieved into assigned and highly secret and classified hands in a variety of corporations working in conjunction with the U.S. government.
To the phones we go now, Linda. That's what they've been waiting for. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Oh, this is an honor to speak to both of you. I've got something to tell you all.
Okay.
I was in the 509th. The squadron had dropped a bomb on Japan. I was stationed in Roswell, New Mexico, from 1956 to 1960, until our squadron moved. Linda Moltenhau?
Yes?
Are you aware that the 509th moved at that time to the East Coast at the Peace Air Force Base up in New Hampshire? And it's like the UFO reports followed us all the way. Then there was a whole string of not only Betty Hill and her husband, but other reports. And I would like to talk to you off the air on my phone, my home phone, if I can give you my home phone.
Yeah, I'll tell you what we'll do, sir. When you're done talking to us on the air, I'll put you on hold, and you can give Gina your phone number, and she'll get it to Linda for you, okay?
Oh, great.
And, sir, for you and for all Coast listeners, you can also send me contact information, which I honor either on the record or off the record, whatever you request, to my email, which is earthfiles@earthfiles.com. It's the same as my website.
Yeah, I've had a little bit of trouble with my computer. This is all new to me. I'm 73 years old. Happened to get back into this and go back to school to learn how to do this.
Sir, let me ask you something. Do you think that the extraterrestrials indeed abducted Betty and Barney Hill?
Oh, absolutely. Because when I was stationed at Roswell, we had a UFO fly over our barracks with one of our airplanes, aircraft 334, and flew around the back of it. If I'd been a little sooner, I would have caught that airplane. And they sent 5 APs to my barracks and took the film. I finally got it back, but over the years, showing it to people, it wasn't much, really. I put the UFO between two power lines in front of the barracks and recorded it on an 8mm camera. But the film was so short and everything that there was no balloons up. This thing was stationary. It was standing still.
Jeez. All right, we're putting you on hold. Linda, you want this guy.
Yes, I do. And, sir, I wondered, in your military career, whether at Roswell or back east, were you ever briefed about an incident and told never to talk about it or made to sign non-disclosure agreements?
No, but I'll tell you what did happen. Our base commander was a two-star general. I knew him personally because of something that happened in Roswell. Everybody in Roswell knows me because I caught a kid that killed an old couple there. That's not important. But when I reported to him and I asked him why he sent 5 APs to my barracks and took the film, he said, well, that's national security.
Right.
So, you know, I couldn't say much after that, so I saluted him and walked out. He started laughing behind me.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold, sir, and Gina, get his phone number, email it to Linda. That's a neat story, Linda.
It is. I'm very much looking forward to talking with him in more detail. And this whole issue of constant and persistent denial for 50-some years, George, that means that we are in a nation in which the knee-jerk reaction by every single person in authority, in the military, in the government, is you deny, you slap down a lid, nothing about the non-human presence on the earth is to reach the media or the public. And that, to me, after half a century, raises up an even more provocative question today. What is it that now is either so threatening or they still do not know about what we're dealing with that they continue to persist with a policy of denial, while thousands, maybe millions of people know that the denial is a lie.
Let's go back to the phones. First time caller line, you are on Coast to Coast with Linda Moulton Howe. Hi there. Well, where'd he go? Are you there? Nope, he's gone. All right, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Go ahead.
Is that me?
Yes, sir.
George?
Yeah.
And Linda, this angry misfit from Minnesota. I've been listening to you guys for a long time, blah, blah, blah. Everybody says that, but I just had to say it once. But what I'm really getting at, all right, what I'm talking about is the marks on the back of her car.
Right.
All right. Them, I'm a self-proclaimed physical alchemist. It sounds kind of goofy, but I do have an explanation another day. But it's electromagnetic. It's forced. It's they take electromagnetic energy and force it down. It doesn't have to be metal. It's the same force as gravity. Gravity can grab anything. Nobody has an explanation for gravity. But it is electromagnetic. And what it does is it pulls on the electrons in the car. And that's exactly how they put them out. How they don't remember anything is a little bit different that came after. But as far as the abduction in general, all right, when they hit the car, they went out. All right. And that it's so strong that it did leave the marks in the car, and it probably pulled the paint away. I didn't hear.
Were
that.
These like electromagnetic pulses, do you think?
Yes, a pulse, but like instead of one single pulse over and over again, all right, it was several. And they were hitting so fast. I've experimented myself. I have so many things to tell you. But as far as this goes,
Let me just make a comment here. That the electromagnetic spectrum is huge. It includes light. It includes microwaves. It includes gamma rays. It includes X-rays. It includes infrared. All of that, that's electromagnetic energy. So when it comes to being able to produce silver dollar-sized circles, more than a dozen of them, all of equal size in the back of a car, and the paint was not removed. It was simply shinier than the rest of the car. If there is any professional listening who does have an explanation for what they think occurred with this car, I would be happy to hear it, and you can communicate with me off the record if you prefer. It would be nice to hear from people on the record, but I think too often the word electromagnetic and gravity are used sort of like Kleenex and Xerox. Do you know what I'm saying? And we need very specific physics.
All right. That's an interesting take on all of that. Let's go next to our wild card line. You are on Coast to Coast with Linda Moulton Howe. Go ahead, please.
I had the pleasure of meeting Betty Hill up in Rochester, New York at the MUFON meeting. That I believe it was a couple of years back. And at that meeting, she stated that she met all the cosmonauts and all the astronauts. And that showed me that on some level, it was being debunked publicly, but yet on another level, it was treated very seriously, because she wouldn't have met people of that caliber if they didn't recognize her abduction for what it was.
Right.
And I'd like
that's
to
a good point.
Comment on that, on what my observation is. This is how.
Yes, I think that many people in professional lives went to talk with Betty with sort of the idea that everybody has, and maybe they'll learn one more piece of something that they hadn't heard before. And contrary to all of the controversy, I had always placed the Betty and Barney Hill case as perhaps one of the most substantive on record. Certainly, J. Allen Hynek took it very seriously and went and had dinner with Benjamin Simon at his home. Kathy Martin was there with her family. And this was at the time of the 11th hypnosis session afterwards, after it. And that J. Allen Hynek had asked apparently specifically, if Benjamin Simon would allow him, Dr. Hynek, the astronomer, mm-hmm. who became the investigator for the Air Force on UFO phenomena, he wanted to have the experience of asking questions to at least Betty under hypnosis himself, Hynek did. And this was arranged. And J. Allen Hynek would not have gone out of his way to go to Benjamin Simon's home in Boston to meet and have him do a hypnosis session in which he could ask questions if he was not taking this extremely seriously.
Linda, do you know if the late John Mack, when he was practicing psychiatry and alien abduction cases, had an opportunity to talk with Betty Hill before she passed away?
I don't know firsthand. There may be people listening who do, and if so, that would be an interesting fact to find out.
I would love to find out. West of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, please.
Blessings to you, George. How you doing?
Hey, Suleiman, if I remember the voice.
That's right. You've got an excellent memory. And blessings to you, Linda.
Thank you.
Linda, I'm an African-American mixture, black, Portuguese, French, Cherokee, and Irish. And I've had contact since I was 3 years old with several different species, and I even speak an extraterrestrial language. The reason why I'm calling you this evening is that the truth about Barney Hill being an African-American male at that particular time in the 1960s does not reach the public. They always speak about his wife and how brave she was, and that is not the truth. As a matter of fact, Barney Hill was the one who asked specific questions of these entities, even to the point where he asked, was God real, and was the Sacred Heart of Jesus Christ real? And they told him that God was real and that the Sacred Heart of Jesus Christ was the Messiah of 12 worlds, and this one that we live on is the most wicked. And they said that he had asked these entities very, very deep information in regards to their existence, their relationship to mankind, and that story is never, never told.
Where did you hear this, Suleiman?
Yes, I've never heard this. I've never seen this in a transcript, so I don't know what your source is.
Okay, I have a top-secret clearance in crypto. I got that when I was in the Army during the Vietnam period. I had interesting contacts with a lot of people, and again, I have had contacts throughout my life with different entities, human entities, entities that were non-human, even energy life forms. I've had all types of communication. So I was very, very interested in the Barney Hill story, and when I pursued it, that is the information that I got. And the reason that they did not want the
transcripts. You didn't get this from the transcripts of the original hypnosis tapes. That does not exist, those words you said.
Well, yes, they do exist. That's what I'm telling you. They do exist. The man was not. Did you see the picture that James Earl Jones did in regard to him?
That was a great
one. They made him look like a coward. They made him screaming and hollering and everything else. Well, you have to remember, racism was at its highest point during the time that Barney Hill and his wife had that particular contact.
At the beginning of my introduction of the second half hour, I went over their background, and he was considered a prominent civil rights leader in New Hampshire, and he and Betty were invited to Lyndon Baines Johnson's inaugural.
That is true. Linda, we're at the break. Stay with us in a moment. Thank you for that call, Suleiman. We'll be back. Well, we continue to make donations to Mr. Al Bielek from the Philadelphia Experiment, thanks to you, when you subscribe or renew your After Dark newsletter. So call 1-888-727-5505 or go online, coasttocoastam.com, to subscribe. You'll also get an incredible free CD, an Art Bell interview with Al Bielek, talking about the Philadelphia Experiment. And then we're donating portions of those proceeds to the financially strapped Al Bielek. So thank you on behalf of all of us for what you're doing there to help Al Bielek. And welcome back with Conversations with Linda. We'll take the rest of your phone calls this hour. Linda, any conferences coming up for you?
In November, the first one is the MJ-12 UFO conference with Ryan Wood and a whole bunch of really interesting people in Las Vegas. And that is November, I think it's that second weekend in November. And then the Chet Snow conference down in Tempe is the next weekend. And so I hope that Coast listeners will sign up. They're going to be two very, very good conferences.
And I think last year, did you not go live for us with a number of guests from Ryan's conference?
Yeah, and it would be fun to do that again. And
yeah.
It would be really fun to work one of those with you so we would do it live like we did before.
That was a couple years ago, and that was fun. I enjoyed myself on that one.
It really was.
I think that may have been my very first coast-to-coast remote. And I love the people who listen to this program are coming from all around the country there.
Right. We did it a couple of times, once with you there live and then once with you in L.A. and me there.
Yep.
And I thought those were, because we went on for quite a long time, and so we were able to get a lot in on Coast.
All right. Get Tom those dates, okay?
All right.
All right. Great. Let's go back to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on with Linda Moulton Howe. Go ahead, please.
Hi, George. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
How you doing? George, love your show. Linda, you're always one of my favorite guests to listen to. But I have a quick question for you, Linda. Some months ago, you had reported that a military aircraft had collided with a saucer, and it landed either in an ocean or a lake, and that there was some salvage crew that detected it underwater by sonar, and they were going to try to retrieve it. Do you have anything updated on that?
I wish. That was the Adam Jimenez and his partner with the Great Lakes Diving Company story. And it is truly a mystery because after doing a very in-depth Coast interview with Adam Jimenez, and they had a website with a lot of sonar images, and the last parting information between him and me was that they were going to continue their research, that he would be back in touch with me as a follow-up. And the next thing all of us knew is their website was dismantled, and no one, including a friend of his that had been in touch with him, has heard from them since. And he had said that they had planned in the summer of 2007 to try to do more work with a video camera, because their original goal, as he described it, was to do a documentary film for release about discovering this F-86 jet in the bottom with this object that was causing them sonar interruption. And they were trying to find out and figure out what it was. And this tied in with a Air Force, a real event that had occurred, and is one of the most documented disappearances of an American jet in the proximity of what was considered to be an unidentified aerial object. And there was a merging of the jet and the object. That was in the official report that had been written about intensely. And so that was the question. Could what Adam Jimenez was describing and showing in their sonar, side-scanning sonar radar, could it be this event? Well, it's very controversial because nothing yet has been proved. The images, along with the website, disappeared except for the report that I have at Earth Files that was done extensively at the time in conjunction with my Coast interview. When and if anything more is learned, I will report it. But until then, it is a silent mystery.
Gee, what's going on with the drone story, Linda?
Well, Isaac stays in touch. That's one big deal. But he has not released any more information. And the last Earth Files that I released last month is the last in-depth information that we've received. But I guess I'm trying to say is the story isn't closed as long as he stays in touch.
Does it still baffle you?
I think it's the most significant release of information that I've seen in a long time, the Carrot document and Isaac. And the truth is that if everybody in the Coast audience could see some of the professional emails requesting that I not reveal their names or even reprint some of the emails that I have received saying that the Carrot document, from their point of view, is legitimate and valid.
Let's go to our next wildcard line. You're on the air with us. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Hi, George and Linda.
Hello.
Hi. I had some questions. I currently am reading the Jim Keith book, Sources of the Illuminati, and I know he mentions you a lot. Did you work with him on the book?
Who is this?
Jim Keith.
No, I don't think you worked with him, Linda.
No. I am always hearing that I am discussed or quoted in books that no one has ever come to me directly.
Oh.
And the only thing I know is that I have done so much media and I have spoken at so many conferences over the years that people can sort of usurp if they are not doing things properly and asking permission and proposing what they're going to reprint, that all sorts of things, sometimes very misconstrued, get put in books and all manner of media that have nothing to do with me, where no one ever came to me and I have no idea what has been published.
Oh, no, this was just a book. It's showing his theory on the UFOs is that it's the government and not actual beings from anywhere else.
And see, I would completely disagree.
I think that's what I'm just in the middle of reading it, and I just saw your name a lot and was listening because you're on tonight. what do you think of those theories, just that he thinks that there's nothing, no alien beings, nothing like that, that
they're all
the government.
Government contrived.
Yeah.
What do you think, Linda?
Well, I think that the bottom line for me is, if you had walked in my shoes from 1979 to 2007.
I am not walking in high heels. Not today, not tomorrow.
Well, it hasn't been high heels because you can't walk in high heels out in lots of mountains, hills, and cowpens.
I could just see you doing that.
No, it's usually been cowboy boots. But if you had walked in my boots and had sat across from the people that I have interviewed, some off the record entirely, and then they died, and they had nothing to gain in telling me what they had knowledge of outside of the fact that my work was provoking them to seek me out to talk to me. And you realize that people have had face-to-face with non-human beings, and they describe it in exquisite detail. And if you go back into the beginning of the 20th century, for example, that there were stories about these unusual animal deaths that were bloodless excisions and no tracks, and people linking the animal mutilations with lights in the sky and sometimes with silver discs over the animals in the 20th century. It seems to me impossible to find any human technology that could explain beams in which people have described to me, again in exquisite detail, seeing animals rising in beams up into glowing disks, and in some cases seeing the animals coming down in a beam and being dropped into a pasture. And we have forensic evidence all over the place where animals have broken bones in necropsies, and the one that I investigated this past fall in Montana, where we had soil, plant, and the body itself, evidence that the animal had been dropped from a high place in order to bounce and make a little bit of a crater. These are pieces of forensic evidence that have gone on for too long, way before the so-called modern day, in which people have been describing the same kind of beam technology lifting heavy animals. And as far as I'm concerned, that is not human technology.
You know, Linda, I sure wish Leonard Springfield, J. Allen Hynek, Frank Edwards, Edward Ruppelt, I wish those guys, Donald Kehoe, Kenneth Arnold, all of those people who started this, basically, were with us today. Man, would they be great interviews, wouldn't they?
No, Well, there's extraordinary information. Right now at Earth Files, in one of my real X-Files, I am unfolding a series of discussions that I have had with people who must remain anonymous, but the information is so relevant to Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2, to Betty and Barney Hill, to the whole concept of extraterrestrial biological entities. And this is information that I had received from people in the 80s, and that I'm trying to put it into a kind of unfolding context of things today. And as I work on this, even though I've known the material, it is amazing how the picture gets clearer and clearer as more pieces keep coming together that we did not have in the 80s or in the 90s. More is coming out now, and it's making a lot more sense. And I think that part of the complexity in all this, why people even say, well, is it necessarily extraterrestrial? Could it be something that has been inhabiting our planet for a quarter of a billion years and living underground? Yes, that's possible. Could it be from a parallel universe, a parallel timeline that is not this particular timeline? Yes, that's possible in terms of modern quantum physics, that there could be parallel timelines. And according to Good at Harvard and others, if their hypothesis and theories are correct, there could be a foam, literally an infinite number of bubbles, like foam, each bubble being a universe like this one, perhaps with different physics, bubble to bubble. The complexity of our universe as we keep learning about it, and the fact that there is so much dark energy and dark matter that we don't understand, and that the part of the universe that we're living in only makes up about 4% of all that is supposed to be there, says to me, George, that if for anybody to stand and say, we can't have extraterrestrials here because they can't get here from there, that they're completely misunderstanding that in another 100 years, if we are allowed to survive ourselves on this planet, where our nanotechnologies and our large-scale technologies are, even in 100 years, we would probably be already traveling to planets in our solar system and beyond. So it's logical that we have had intelligence interacting with a planet like this. And now we are, it seems to me, on the verge of increasingly discovering the hard pressure of the fact that that exists. And now it's, when will the governments give up on their strict policies of denial and finally open up everything so the entire human family knows what they know? That is the part that bothers me the most, why a certain handful of humans have decided that they would have the chokehold on information about other intelligences for all these decades.
It's all about power, Linda.
Power and money.
West of the Rockies, your turn. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, George and Linda.
Hi.
This is Matt in Idaho yes, Falls.
Mm-hmm.
My question, I only heard about the last 15 minutes of the Betty Hill part of the regression. Was there any other description that these entities gave to Betty or Barney Hill concerning the star system they were from? Did they have a name for it themselves? Did they describe any kind of planetary system? And the reason I ask that is now, you know, astronomers are getting much better at finding extrasolar planets, you know, through the wobbles of the stars and whatnot. And if there was any kind of description made of the star system, or has any astronomers, you know, put their telescopes on it to measure the radial velocity of the stars and any wobbles that would be a, you know, a detection of any.
Well, apparently what they did is they asked her if she knew where the Earth was in
right.
proximity. And
I heard that part.
And she said, no, I don't. And then they said, well, then you won't understand where we're from. Linda, I don't think they ever pointed that out, where they were from.
No, there was never any definition. Right after that was the commotion about getting that book back.
Right.
So, no, it ended there. But the man is asking a very good question in terms of what have we learned about that general neighborhood of stars in terms of wobbles that might indicate planets. And at Earth Files, I have been running stories now for the last two or three years repeatedly about the increasing discoveries of planets. And one of them this year is around the, one of those suns, which is there's two Gliese, and there is one of those suns that appears to have perhaps an even Earth-sized planet. And we're this is discoveries right now, and you have to go back 45 years to when Betty drew that star map under hypnosis.
Wouldn't that be incredible, Linda, if one day, through our own technology, we stumble across this planetary system out there?
Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2 is out there in a group of yellow suns that have ended up Tau Ceti, Epsilon Eridani. They have been on lists periodically of this is where some intelligent life might be.
The beings that they have described, Betty and Barney, in terms of appearance, have they been described through the ages?
This is a very interesting question. Under hypnosis, both Betty and Barney are describing basically the same type of beings that have cat eyes, or you might say reptilian eyes, because they have the bumpy skin again. Remember when I had Thomas Coleman Shepard on from the Navy, who saw the photographs that were supposed to be of beings that were retrieved at one of the Roswell crashes in 47, and he said they look snake-like with bumps on their skin. Betty and Barney Hill, under hypnosis, described a bumpiness to the skin, a grayish skin, of these beings that had the term was cat eyes, with vertical pupils. Now, what is so interesting is that about 2 weeks or so after the September 19th to 20th, 1961 encounter, Betty had a vivid dream, more than one, and she wrote down, it haunted her, and in the vivid dream were pieces that were like what happened under hypnosis and other things that were strangely dissonant. And one of them was she described seeing a being who had a huge nose that she compared to Jimmy Durante. Now, there is a whole subset from the Holloman exchange of 1964 in which huge-nosed beings have been described, photographs have been described, face-to-face meetings have been described. Who are these huge-nosed entities, and what is their relationship to the flat-nosed? And at Earth Files, when you look at these exquisite illustrations that have been done over the years, you will see what I think are almost like photographs of some of the beings, and then I have placed the drawings from the Holloman April 25th, 1964 exchange. Basically, the exchange was really at the Trinity.
Got to run, one. Got to run.
Yeah, there's a lot, George.
Okay. Thank you, Linda. I know you have to go, too.
I'm going to do an interview right now.
I know it. I would love to hold you over another hour. Good luck to you. Have a great Labor Day weekend. I'll be back with Open Lines in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.